Blog Talk Radio.
Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. This is a special broadcast this evening. We are following up on an interview I did Monday evening, and it concerned Massachusetts and upcoming bills out there, and the hearing that the Senate had on the judiciary, and we're going to be talking about that in just a minute with our guests. We have three guests on with us tonight. I want to remind everybody about Tuesday night and our show with Carly Walden on medical predators. This show is going gangbusters. The reports are coming in from all over the country of people watching their loved ones murdered in front of them by hospice while they are under medical kidnap by a hospital. We even have a nurse caught laughing and dancing and singing, "Your mother's going to die tonight." Right before she administered the kill shot. They are culling the elderly before they do it. They're robbing them blind. They're culling the disabled. This is happening at a faster and faster rate. And all across the country, we are seeing a ramping up of these bills coming out on the state level. These are companion bills to S-178 that came out that supposedly was supposed to be the Elder Justice and Protection Act. And so what we're having happen here is that actually the states are now following suit and laying in the groundwork to make sure these bills work. That what happens with all of these bills, like S-178, it's all firmly in place. So with that in mind, I'm going to bring on our guests. Now, what happened yesterday was a hearing with the judiciary, which was supposed to be another one of these kabuki shows where, you know, everything was going to just be wonderful and fluff and buff. And isn't this, well, we're listening and we're gravely concerned. And, oh, yes, we're going to do some, but you know damn well they had no intention of doing anything. This was a dog and pony show. It just didn't turn out the way they thought it was gonna. And that had to do with who was in the audience. So with that, please let me introduce our guests for this evening. We have three, and one of them is David Arnold, who was in attendance yesterday, Steve Ford, who was in attendance yesterday, and one of my favorite people, attorney Lisa Belanger, who absolutely blew their socks off. All three of you, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marty. I really appreciate you having us on.
Oh, you bet. I'm telling you, this whole thing, I don't know how any of you kept your tempers or anything else, having attended many town hall meetings and hearings and this and that and something else. I got a BS meter, and when it goes off, I launch. And that's just all there is to it. And I've always told everybody, if you embarrass easily, don't sit next to me in public. Because I'll call you out right across the room. But anyway, so Lisa, why don't you
wish
start
you were
this
there,
off?
Marty. Wish you were there.
Why don't you start this off and let us know what this hearing was supposed to be about, what you feel like the committee thought they were going to accomplish.
Let's see. I actually, I'm going to be writing an article about how
Can you hold on up there? Somebody's got something playing in the background. Could you please turn it down? or turn it off or something, because we're getting back feed from it.
Getting back feed. Okay. So, you know, they think that when they hold these legislative hearings, that they're, you know, that they're creating an atmosphere of having the citizens involved. And it's exactly as you described, Marty. It's just smoke and mirrors. Basically, they already know what they want to do, how they're going to do it, and it's just to appease the people. It's just a sham. They give each person a 3-minute time limit to be able to. Yeah, 3 minutes.
Yeah,
except, you know, obviously, though, it appeared to me, though, the people who were pushing for the bill spoke first, but I might be wrong, but I could have sworn that time clock wasn't even on. But that could be just me. What do I know? So, yeah, it's a whole entire different atmosphere when they are having the, you know, they already know which way they're going. So they're very polite and let these people say what they want. And then when they have people on that are opposing it, it's a whole different ball game. And so, that, you know, it's they're not there to really discuss the bill.
Right.
That doesn't happen whatsoever. So I actually was the last person to speak. And
okay.
Basically what I, my purpose was to talk about why this entire bill is a conflict of interest and why it needs to be mixed all together. Actually, I basically had explained to them, well, actually, I believe there were supposed to be 17 legislators on that panel, but it seemed to be that quite a few decided to remove themselves. In fact,
no, surely not.
Well, if I recollect correctly, I think there were five. There were only five left. Okay.
Oh.
Yes, but in the most interesting part of this was that Senator Cynthia Cream, who. Actually, her name is as the lead person presenting this bill.
Right.
She decided not to be there, which, of course, I put that on the record.
Right.
And Senator Brownsberger, he is the chairperson. And actually, I invited both of the senators to come on the show tonight, because yesterday Senator Brownsberger seemed to have a problem with one of the speakers. It was Janet Pidge who was speaking, and she brought up certain people's names. And,
right.
And Senator Brownsberger thought that was very unfair, because those people weren't there to defend themselves.
Well, I'm sorry, Lisa, but let me say something here. He thinks that's very unfair, but it's all right for you to have to go to one of these kangaroo courts and not be allowed to defend yourself. And they're standing there right in your face saying things that you know are not true. I want to add also quickly, the board is full. If one of the senators' representatives from Massachusetts is in this line of callers here, Please hang up. Call Blog Talk back at 917-388-4520 and press the number 1 immediately. That'll flag me that you want to talk. We'll get you right on air. I promise we will. Go ahead, Lisa.
So but fortunately, although Senator Brownsberger had made that qualification, he did allow Janet Pidge to, continue to finish her statement. So based on the way that he had presented himself, I knew that there would be a problem, so to speak, because I was there to do exactly that, is call out the people who are perpetrating racketeering.
Yes.
And so I set out right away that was what I was going to do, that he should not have a problem with that, that especially Senator Cynthia Cream, who is the forefront person and whose name appears on the bill, that she forfeits any rights whatsoever, considering she should have been there. So,
exactly.
You know, that...
Lisa, could I mm-hmm. interrupt here? I'm sorry, but I'm getting some emails here already about what this bill is. In the last few months here, I wrote about, I believe his name was Harshberger or something, the former AG of Massachusetts, who came out with this public guardianship idea. And he had this all laid out, and this is where he said that everybody should have immunity, even workers in a nursing home who were guilty of what he called ordinary negligence. I had written the gentleman, and I call him that because I'm a lady. I wrote him and asked him in the letter to please explain to me just exactly what ordinary negligence was, because as far as I knew, negligence was negligence. There was no ordinary. What would we consider ordinary? I never, of course, got a response. But these bills that are showing up now are almost verbatim the bill he put forward, his proposal that had to do with this, is contained in these bills.
Let me say this. Why on earth would any level of negligence at all be subject to being held accountable? I don't, even if it's a mistake, okay, there needs to be accountability.
Yes.
So, yesterday, former AG Harshberger was one of the people that I actually had also called out, because he has been at the forefront as well. And see, there appears to be a problem, though, when he actually is part of this guardianship trust organization, along with his friend, attorney Peter Macy, Mr. Macy actually testified yesterday.
Right.
If that's what you want to call it, testimony. I'd rather say it seems like bumbling.
Yes.
Let's see. Not fact-specific, I should say.
Right. Another thing, Lisa, so, in these bills was this alluding to, and it's repeated in the bills also, public-private partnerships, and how this was going to save the state of Massachusetts hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, but they would not, and I could not get out of them, who these private investors would be. My question immediately became, nobody would invest in a program like this unless they stood to make a gigantic profit. So who were these private investors that were so altruistic, so public-minded, so civically devoted that they would help fund this private or this public guardianship program? Were you ever able to get an answer on that?
Well, I was never able to ask anything, period. But let's say this. Former Harshberger works for the law firm of Kasner and Edwards. Now, it's very interesting that that law firm represents a variety of people in or entities in that probate realm, which in of itself is a conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
They represent private people for quote unquote estate planning.
Uh-huh.
You know, let's get, you know,
yeah.
Buyer
yeah.
beware that they're going to put them on the conveyor belt. But
yes.
Not only though private estate planning, however, they also represent elder protective service agencies. Yes. And
okay.
also, from my understanding, they represent public, quote-unquote, guardian businesses. So
yes.
it's a three... Yes.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But now, this is very interesting. Now, not only is Attorney Macy on that guardian trust company, well, I also introduced documentation, you see, that showed that he himself has been well established in the probate court business as
uh-huh.
court appointments, you see.
Okay.
In fact, I believe, if I'm correct, then Mr. Macy actually referred to it as the probate court club.
Club?
But,
did you say club?
He said the word club. Yes.
Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, he said the word club.
Okay, Lisa, let's break here for a second. We got two other guests here. Let's bring David in. David, what was your take on all of this?
Well, my take in dealing with the legislature in general is that we sort of have two different types of human beings. One are lawyers and legislators, and then there's the rest of us. And so far, I've been unable to really establish any kind of relationship with either one. I could talk to ordinary people with no problem, but I just can't communicate with lawyers and I can't communicate with legislators. I tell them all kinds of stuff, but I never get any response. They say thank you and that's it. And I had a particular problem with Peter Macy to get a lot of information from them as to what their position was. And I said, you know, we should sit down and talk about this. And maybe we can come to a better understanding of our mutual positions and what the problems are. Well, I got back this email that says, your message does not offer any basis for a substantive response. I mean no disrespect. We simply don't agree with the assumption upon which your views are premised that a select few individuals know the truth about guardianship or are the only uncorrupted voices. Well, that kind of ended that. How do you
for heaven's
that?
Sakes. Well, what angers me about this, David, is that this is the standard procedure across the country. When you nail them to the wall and hold them to a specific, they divert off into something that is totally irrelevant, says nothing. And as you say, how do you respond to that? You just spoke like a blithering idiot. What do I say to that? And this has been my problem all these years I have dealt with this stuff, is that you meet with these politicians, these elected officials, the people whose salaries you are paying or helping to pay, who are living quite well at your expense, and you can't get a straight answer from them about anything, and they will protect. They will absolutely put everything they got on the line to protect, as Lisa referred to it, this club or some other club of another kind. The anger of the public is rising to such a level because of the non-responsiveness of our politicians that I don't know how this is all going to turn out, this thing of they're culling the elderly and disabled. They're kidnapping our children. They are holding them medically kidnapped in the hospital, doing the same thing to the elderly and the disabled. I don't know where this is going to end and how bad it's going to have to get before we can force these people we put into office to address this honestly. But I don't see any – they're just not going to do it. And, Steve, why don't you jump in here? What are your thoughts?
You talking to me?
Yeah, I was talking to you.
I was talking to you.
Well, we're having to share this one phone here.
Yeah.
This is my first foray into this particular world. I had suspected that it was in Texas, where I'm from, for a long time, but just never stopped long enough to really look into it. But Lisa has brought me into this very unwittingly, I might say, and I'm in a state of shock. Cannot believe that our elected officials can stoop to the level that they are stooping down to. And the electorate, the people that vote these into office, seems like they keep repeating and allowing these people to stay in these offices and still doing what they're doing. What we're looking at and what we see is a massive public education program to educate the voter, and it's through the ballot box is the only place that we can find where real change is going to be affected.
Well, Steve, I'll tell you, you know, Bush-Cheney, how Bush ever got into office, Bush Jr. doofus, how he ever got into office was always a mystery to me until you looked at how the vote was rigged through the Sequoia and Diebold voting machines. And they have backdoor programming, and I find it odd that you can't run a casino and not have your programming open to inspectors, but for some reason voting machines can't be inspected. And I have come to the conclusion at this age, and I'm getting up there, that I don't care who we think we voted for, the winner has already been selected, and that machine can't produce anything more than what it was programmed to produce. So whether we're electing them or not is really a question, and especially when you see the level of corruption we are seeing today, and these same people somehow keep getting into office. The only conclusion I can draw that makes any sense at all is those machines are rigged. We need to go back to paper ballots, because the disgust at the public level, the disgust from the public over not only state legislators, but most particularly on the federal level, the corruption is so blatant that, excuse me, I don't know how much more we're going to take. Lisa, when you were in there, you went head to head with this senator. I want you to talk a little bit about that. In fact, I want you to talk a lot about that, how that went down.
Wow, I don't know if I'm able to get a better perspective from Dave and Steve here, because it's a lot easier, for people, looking, outward, watching me do what I do. But for me, here's why people need to be outraged, and pretty much why Senator Brownsberger is really, really peeved, or, if that's the right word, but is that I presented the committee with explicit court documentation. My biggest point was, is that this is basically financial and physical abuse, exploitation of the elderly. And what's so horrendous is that Senator Crane presented documentation showing that her primary business is having a pretty good, prominent law firm doing this type of work: probate court, guardianship. So she is spearheading a bill that she and her family, her daughter is a prominent figure in that law firm, they are profiting from this bill. And I suggest that in of itself is an ethical violation. And the chairman, who is Senator Brownberger, actually, I suggest, an obligation to report that misconduct. So you would think that that would be bad enough, that she's profiting off of the voters, taxpayers, by spearheading this bill through actual exploitation. And I've seen most recently with two of my cases that we're, and as I told Senator Brownberger, that we're talking about actual murder. I mean, when you have actual irrefutable evidence that elders are, that their deaths are being hastened in Massachusetts, as a matter of law, that is a killing. So, now, Senator Cream also, I produced documentation showing that while she has been senator, she has also been appointed guardian ad litem in cases in the probate court.
Wait a minute, Lisa. You mean while she's serving as senator?
Yes. She. I provided court documentation showing she was appointed as a guardian ad litem in a conservator case with, I believe it was State Street Bank, if I'm not.
Okay, there must have been a load of money associated with this.
Well, usually is, but but the fact of the matter is, I mean, Senator Brownberger was very displeased that that I had brought up that information and actually showed that to the public, the actual court documents, you see. So
how dare you?
He said he was, you know, that I was going over my 3-minute limit, but that he was willing to give me 6 minutes.
Ooh.
And, yeah, well, I told him I didn't exactly think that that should be considered due process, considering they've stolen 5 years of my father's life.
Yes.
So, yes. So I was proceeding to then show the conflict of interest, you see, of Scott Harshbrother and Peter Mason. And a very ironic thing happened. The legislator, Sheila Harrington, Marty, you don't really like this one. She wanted to know, she wasn't sure whether I was for or against her.
Really? Doesn't it make you wonder, Lisa, how these people stay in these jobs when they can't understand a simple concept? Now, I would have known, I'm telling you, I'm not the brightest bulb on the tree, but I believe I could have figured out you were not for this bill, but go ahead.
Well, because she was under this distinct delusion that this bill actually provided oversight, which I tried to nicely explain why there wasn't oversight, but I think somewhere along the line I may have got interrupted. But
yes.
What was also very interesting is that she actually outright acknowledged the conflict of interest of Mr. Macy and Mr. Harshbrother, because she outright stated that we don't know who, it wasn't necessarily true that these people were going to be involved.
Mm.
So that they wouldn't necessarily be part of the guardian. And so, but then we shouldn't worry. But I tried to explain to her that the nature in which they were so strongly, forcefully going and advocating for this bill was very concerning.
Okay.
So I was going through documentation, and I wanted to show how there is the proverbial description of the incestuous-like nature of these people who are supposedly guardians, okay?
Okay.
Because I can show that they're actually, they get to, some of them actually play all three roles in one case. They are the petitioner.
I'm getting several messages here, and people are asking about the hazing and of death, and so I'm going to run over this real quickly for you. This is what we cover on Tuesday Night Show and have covered on any other shows. What happened under Obamacare was that hospice got an infusion of $11.5 billion to change its mandate, its mission, its image. They were going to keep the image of Good Samaritan, which they were. Yeah, they were unbeatable in that area, but now have become the Grim Reaper. Now, either under the conditions of hospice, most especially, or medical kidnap, where the hospitals now have their own guardians on staff, and they will guardianize you immediately. What happens is they begin withholding food and hydration. This doesn't mean you've got a food or hydrating tube. It just means they stop feeding and watering you. And it very quickly begins to shut down the organs during this time. What they're doing is what's called terminal sedation. And they begin sedating the victim. And then the closer comes in eventually and gives what is known as the kill shot. And that'll take them out in 10, 15 minutes. And I want the audience to understand who hasn't been exposed to this before. This is no different than an execution of a death row prisoner. It is absolutely no different. Only thing is that prisoner is given far more mercy than these people in these situations. Now, what happens to people in guardianship or who have been guardianized, medically kidnapped, forced into hospice is... it is done slowly. It is a torturous, torturous procedure. It is considered in the human rights, UN human rights mandates, to be one of the most egregious forms of torture. It is extraordinarily painful, and they create the medical conditions necessary to allow them to claim futility of care and then come in and, as I say, deliver the kill shot. People would be far better off to run out, rob a bank, commit a gross felony, and get the death sentence. They'd be treated far more humanely than what people are treated in guardianship, and especially in the hospice situation. They want your property. They want your money. They want everything you got, and until they get it, they're going to keep you alive. And as soon as they've got it all, you're out of here. Anyway, go ahead, Lisa.
Well, I'd like to clarify, people want to, you know, they say, oh, euthanasia. This is not euthanasia. Euthanasia means someone who has saying that they want to die, so
yes,
to speak. Okay? The
mm-hmm.
situation that I have been involved in are completely contrary to that. And in fact, you posted my most recent article with Boston Broadside, which I'd like to give a nice shout out to Ryan Brennan, because he really deserves, you know, a Pulitzer. This man has the courage to expose this, and I can't say enough about him, because there aren't too many people. He and Terry LaPointe of medicalkidnap.com they're just godsends, because they're willing to let people know what is going on. And unfortunately, there aren't enough journals out there who are willing to do that. And
I agree. Yep.
So with Alice Julian, an 89-year-old woman who absolutely had no reason to die, the thing that really perturbs me is when someone says, well, she lived a long time. You know, it really frosts me, because when someone is 89, what is that magic number? Just because they're 89, when there is no underlying terminal reason illness for that person's life to be ended,
right.
I don't care if they're 99. I don't care if they're 109. You
right.
know, it's just a distortion. And unfortunately, you know, I even have the paperwork to show, you know, that this woman, they thought that they, you know, were showing that she didn't want, you know, nutrition and so forth. But guess
mm-hmm.
what? The actual paperwork actually showed she wanted hydration. Imagine that.
Yes.
But yet
yes.
that they deprived her, okay, of
yes.
nutrition. They deprived that woman of hydration. And what is so beyond the pale is that at the teleconference hearing that I attained that with the Supreme Judicial Court, which the court told me originally that I wasn't able to get a hearing because, you know, there were other avenues to go, you see.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I took exception to that. And
yep.
The attorneys just outright incriminated themselves, showing that they used morphine to kill her.
Yes, and this is what they use morphine cut with Adderall, Ativan, Haldol, Zyprexa, or a combination of several of those things, but it's always 50% pure cut morphine, and within 15 minutes it does the job. David, you're sitting here quietly, and I appreciate that. What are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that a guardian has the power to kill somebody at any time they want. And one of the things that we were trying to do, Lisa and I, in both of these cases, was to get an autopsy to determine exactly under what conditions she died. Turns out it's impossible. I mean, first there was the medical examiner. Then they said, well, you have to have a police report. We drove out to Framingham. We went to the state police barracks. We went to the local police barracks. Both of them refused to take a complaint. And
right.
Attorney Belanger explained to them that this was a criminal offense, that it was shortening a person's life. They insisted, no, that's malpractice. Go over to the hospital and talk to them about it. She kept insisting on it. And the guy went to his supervisor, and he finally came out and said, no, we're not going to take a plaint. Well, at that point, Lisa was about to explode, you know.
No.
But all we could just document what happened. And,
somehow I usually get that reaction. David, David, you've been with me to court many times. Somehow every time I go, it seems to be the same reaction.
Yep, and justly so. So then the next
yep.
step was the Attorney General's office. Well, Lisa filed this complaint, didn't get anywhere. And then I finally decided I was just going to go and talk to them. Well, they gave me this big runaround. You know, first they tried to tell me, oh no, we can't take a criminal complaint. Oh, really? Called Lisa back. She says, oh, yes, they have a criminal department. So then I called them back again. Oh, yeah, we do have a criminal department, but this particular type of criminal complaint we don't take. Oh, okay. Well, I talked to somebody.
Good
here,
God.
Have them explain to me exactly which type of criminal complaint it is. Well, finally, I got in touch with somebody who was in the criminal department, and he told me that, well, by statute, the local district attorney has primary responsibility, and we have only secondary. I see. So you can't take a complaint. Well, actually, only under extraordinary circumstances. Oh, really? Okay. So I called back Lisa, and I said, well, he says that they can take a complaint under extraordinary circumstances. And Lisa says, thank you, Dave. That's what I just want to tell them. So,
okay, who's shuffling papers? Quit it. Go ahead.
Sorry.
Yeah, I figured it was you troublemaker. Yeah. Well, what do you, okay, all of you, David, Steve, you need to jump in here and say a few words. What was your takeaway from this hearing? As you were leaving, what was your impression of all this?
Well, I guess the main thing that struck my consciousness was the criminality of it, and it seems like there was just a blatant disregard for just basic human life. And I have, over the years, I have watched this creeping thing. It seems like it's crept into our social fabric that, ever so often on the world stage, we will see this ugly Hitlerite type thing, this Mussolini, Stalinist type thing to rise on the human stage, the world stage, and it takes years and years and years for people to really realize what's going on. But the world has not learned their lessons from World War I or World War II. Nobody has learned those lessons yet because they allowed Pol Pot, to get away with what he done. Murdered millions of his own people. Stalin murdered millions of his own people after World War I. And
right.
when is the collective consciousness of the human condition going to step up and say, enough of this?
Exactly. And thing is, I hate to keep beating this Nazi Germany thing, but people talk about what happened in Nazi Germany, and no offense is intended to anyone. I know it was sold as the Jewish Holocaust, but altogether more than 20 million people died across Europe. And this whole program that Hitler ran was based on the American Eugenic Society from the late 1800s. And they're
right.
Thinking that many of us were, through ethnicity, not qualified to live or to be treated as human beings. And we saw that reiterated in the Dred Scott Act, or opinion from the Supreme Court that dictated that black men, most particularly, but the black race, but the black men most particularly, were no different than any other thing or piece of property on the farm. They were chattel. And they were less than human. And so but what we saw happening in Germany was this a wholesale killing off of exactly what's happening here right now, is the culling of the elderly, the theft of any valuables they had, the culling of the disabled, the taking of the children, which you remember Hitler's youth. We are doing the same thing, only now instead of putting them in military camps, we put them in these god-awful foster homes and we forcibly adopt them out. We use them for medical experimentation, for vaccine experimentation. They killed the gypsies by the millions. They killed anyone who was an educator, an entertainer, anyone who had any kind of infirmity or anything wrong with them was systematically killed. And many people were just killed as an entire community to get them out of the way. But we are
seeing the
same thing.
Well, the New World Order is getting exactly what they want. Through this Elder Protective Services, Child Protective Services, all of these benign sounding things like the Jewish Family Services and Children's Services.
Uh-huh. And Caritas for
Isn't
the Catholics,
it?
Yes.
Yeah. And it's all, the New World Order is getting their way anyway. And when are the voters going to wake? When are the people going to wake up and say enough
Steve,
is enough?
I don't know. So much of this has come out. And this guardianship thing, this probate thing, has been so exposed. It has been blown out. There is not a politician anywhere. And this committee y'all were just faced with could not sit with a straight face and tell you they did not know exactly what was going on.
Oh, hey,
and
listen. This Brownsburger guy sat up there and just fidgeted and squirmed during Janet's testimony and Dave's testimony, and I mean that chair wasn't soft enough for that guy,
Jiminy Christmas. But see, we're doing the same thing. We have fluffed and buffed it, we've shined it up, sanitized it, made it sound all warm and fuzzy. And you don't want to suffer, do you? You don't want Mom to suffer like that, do you? We need to help her out here. And then they go to the patient and don't put your family through this. You've lived long enough. You've had a long life. You need to let go. Don't do this to yourself. Let me give you this shot. But they aren't even that merciful. They are not even that merciful. The outright murder, particularly of elderly people, has become so well known that we actually out in this area, I don't know about where y'all are at, but out in this area, we have people who are hiding their parents and hiding them away because they are terrified that they are going to get snatched and put under one of these guardianships. And they know if they
I told Lisa,
go ahead.
I told Lisa just a couple of days ago, I said, it's going to get to where that anybody that goes to see a doctor needs to take another person with them. They can't go alone.
Always. Always take an advocate with you, always, and someone with a tape recorder. And because, and I'll tell you another reason for that, too, one of the things they rely on in these cases is what that doctor wrote in those notes. And let me give you a little heads up on things. Under the new electronic medical record system, if you go into that doctor's office and they have a big computer sitting there, you're being tape recorded, okay? Don't go in there and say one word about anything about other than why you were there. If you got a cold, don't talk about anything but your cold. I don't care what they question, how you doing, how you feeling, you know, did you, you know, don't answer anything. Keep talking about your cold. Always take an advocate with you recording that conversation. No. Now, under HIPAA.
And everything is everything is written in code, too, to where the patient can understand it.
Exactly. But that coding serves a basic purpose, and that tells them how much money they will get paid for treating that patient for diagnosis X, Y, or Z. This is part of what that coding is. Now, they'll scream HIPAA. HIPAA patient protection has nothing to do with protecting your privacy or your medical records, because any insurance company can get it, any government agency can get it, any other doctor can get it, an attorney can get it, you can't get it. And if you
and the guardians are standing behind that HIPAA big time. That's one of their major hiding places.
But see, this is an admission, Steve. This is identity theft. This is the ultimate in identity theft. The identity of the person they targeted has been given to them. They now present themselves as that person. They access the assets as that person. They are coming in there as Joe Blow, the guardian. I'm sorry, Lisa, what?
Human trafficking.
Yes, you damn right it is. You damn right it is. But this is the ultimate in identity theft. Who else can access that? That guardian can access your medical files and fight you tooth and nail to keep you from seeing them because they have assumed the identity of the victim. So when they object to you seeing the medical records, they are objecting on the basis of they are presenting themselves under this alternate, this alias identity of whomever's life they just stole. But it also serves another purpose, which is far more important to the medical community. It prevents you from seeing medical errors, misdiagnosis, mistakes, neglect, abuse, the application of improper medications, overdosing, all of that, so you can't sue them. The HIPAA is of no value to the ordinary person. And, Steve, you're absolutely right. Never, ever, ever go to the doctor without an advocate with you in the
room. Oh, really, it's a dangerous thing. Really a dangerous thing.
It is. David, what are your thoughts on all this?
Well, it's so obvious to me that what's being done is just completely illegal and unconstitutional. The Constitution says that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process. Well, as we know, the probate court has no due process, no required procedures. They don't have to obey the Constitution, but yet they deprive people of property without any due process. They deprive people of their freedom. They just lock them up. They deprive people of their life. The guardian just decides that they're going to kill you. Well, this violates every principle upon which this country was founded.
But do you know how they're doing it, David? And I found this out. I had Rosanna Miller on. Excellent researcher. She'll find stuff you never knew was there. the Uniform Commercial Code. It's all buried in the Uniform Commercial Code, and it's all conducted under the international law of contracts, where the Constitution, due process, your rights and protections do not apply. You are chattel property. You are treated as commercial property. You are in equity, and that's how they're getting away with it.
I understand that, and I remember you saying that. Well, this is not democracy. You know, we've got this Constitution which guarantees our rights, and then they set up a procedure where they have this, whatever you call it, tribunal that doesn't have to obey any of these rules.
Any of it.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
the probate court is not qualified to be having any of this authority because they're not exercising it under the rules of the Constitution. So the probate court should not have anything to do with guardianship or with declaring a person incapacitated, because both of these require, you know, certain attributes of this body that they don't have. So the power to appoint a guardian has to be taken away from the probate court. You can't allow them to do that because they're not doing it in a constitutional way.
Well, there again, it's a lot of these issues I deal with is, it, and I call it striking the root. You have to go to the underpinnings of how was this constructed. And if you don't take that away, you can keep beating at the top of the tree. It's still going to stand. You hit the root, it's going to fall. And it's going after it under this UCC and discarding this and forcing them to return. I have read probably 50 different treatises on why these tribunals, probate tribunals, are supposedly constitutional. And of course it is, they are the most contorted, twisted, tortured writings you would ever want to read. You know the lunatics are running the asylum when you read them. But it's all to try and justify why these things exist, how they exist, but they were set up under the UCC. And like I say, once you are under that, which is how the basic underlying underpinnings of probate, family court, all of these special orphan courts and everything is UCC and international law of contracts. And under that, you have no rights. So until you dispense with that, you cannot collapse that court.
Let me add this, Marty.
Okay.
That speaking of the Massachusetts Uniform Probate Code, yes, Senator Cynthia Cream can also take a bow for being the forefront person in 2009 to make the unconstitutional provisions of that broadening language that cloaks embezzlement and money laundering. And she did that again in 2012.
Well, she's a real peach, isn't she? I wish she'd call in. Senator Cream, you know, if you're not doing anything, getting your hair done, your nails buffed or something, give us a buzz. 917-388-4520 and press that number 1 immediately and I'll put you right online. And you notice these people never show up. We have extended invitations. I have promised these politicians I won't allow anyone to attack you. You come on and say what you have to say. We'll have a civil conversation. I won't allow anyone to rip into you or anything else. But they don't even have the balls to do that. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Well,
I forgot. I'm a lady.
Well,
I didn't mean to say that.
Yeah.
But you see what I'm saying? They won't even do that. You can promise them, you know, I'll have angels here protecting you. They will not pick up that phone and speak to the public because they cannot have an honest dialogue. They have to lie. They have to lie. And
well,
I'm
very concerned that Cynthia Cream, Senator Cynthia Cream, who is the forefront person of this very bill of Senate 1177, wasn't there to present it herself.
Isn't that something?
We have another guest
here with us. Brian Kinter is on with us from Judicial Accountability Movement. He's listening to this. Brian, are you live?
I am, Marty. I am.
Yes. What's your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I think it's absolutely maddening, and I think that you're absolutely correct. You know, we have so many that talk out both sides of their mouth, you know, and we're saying, listen, all we want is a clear, definitive answer as to the questions that we ask. Don't backpedal. you know, let your yes be yes, your no be no, and tell us exactly where to crack that in the buckwheat. You know, we just want to know where we're headed to. You know, tonight, Marty, I was on another program before your program on the virtual roundtable because I'm saying we've been knocking at this door for the last 30, 40 years trying to get some oversight as to the overreach of our judicial process, and it appears to be falling on deaf ears, and everybody wants to stick their head in the sand and pretend that it's not happening. And the other gentleman that talked earlier there tonight about the Holocaust, you know, and was saying this is exactly where we're headed to, and we're believing
yes.
that, you know, it's high time that we establish an open and honest dialogue to acknowledge the truth that we have a very serious systemic and, you know, systematic abuse being delivered at the hands of the judiciary. And I'm saying, listen, whenever a judge violates your rights, I truly believe that the only recourse that we have is in a jury of our peers. It is the way things are supposed to be done. But yet they cloak it with all of this nonsense and this ignorance. But yet I've been to a number of senators, number of congressmen, number of representatives, all up and down to the U.S. Supreme Court, and nobody can give me a clear, definitive answer as to where the root is for judicial immunity. Where was it ever exactly passed by legislation? I can point you to the section in place where it was imputed or applied in Stump versus Sparkman, but I don't see where they got the authority for the initiation of it.
Okay, let me, everybody that's on board here, Lisa, Steve, Dave, and you, Brian, how about we start not a petition, I'm not talking a petition, but a citizen's demand, okay, that any proclamations of immunity are void and that we do not recognize them and that they will not be recognized in a court of law, and we want judges that are not part of the Bar Association. We want judges who are versed in the law and willing to take responsibility for the rulings they hand down. What if we did something like that? And I'm putting that loosely because I'm just pulling it off the top of my head. Well, how do you think that would work out? Do you think we could get away with it?
Well, that's absolutely...
Go ahead.
That's absolutely correct. Yep. The Constitution doesn't give immunity to anyone. And what a friend of mine who is an attorney told me was that it's based entirely on court decisions. In other words, there never was any legislation passed to give them immunity. It was just that judges started deciding that they would give immunity to people under various conditions. And so it seems to be based solely on precedent, as far as I can tell. There doesn't seem to be any basis for it. And the most scary thing about this bill is that it's going to actually put immunity into law. That's scary.
Yeah. Yes, it is. And they have no right to do that, David. The Supreme Court came out here, I think it was 2 years ago. Personally, I think that's a court that needs to be disbanded. It's costing us a lot of money. Every one of those justices is incorporated and exists on Dun & Bradstreet as a registered corporation. The court itself is registered as a corporation on Dun & Bradstreet, and of course their only fiduciary duty is to make money. Who are they making that money off of? I want to know. Okay, but they have long ceased to serve any purpose to the American public. So we need to get rid of that altogether and revamp it, rebuild it, and if it starts going off the rails again, just quit making trains. All right, the other thing is, since this goes against the Constitution, there were already at least 4 Supreme Court rulings that said judges could not claim immunity because they are supposed to be the expert in the law. And if you and I cannot come into a courtroom and claim ignorance on the law when there are tens of thousands of laws we don't even know anything about, neither could these judges. And yet, and when we heard like Samuel Alito being grilled, will you stand by stare decisis? Will you stand by stare decisis? Meaning issues already settled. Already settled. In other words, if we got a ruling from you that even though it might have been unconstitutional, will you uphold that? And he basically said yes, he would do that to get that job. And so, but apparently that only counts when it's something that benefits them. They did not mention these prior Supreme Court rulings where they had been challenged about immunity and said that you cannot claim immunity. You are, and the judge does apply equally, as you said, to everyone. It doesn't say unless you belong to this special union, unless you wear a black robe, and unless you got together as a group and said, guess what, we're not responsible for anything. And this is basically what they have done. And the public sat there and didn't say squat. Now, what is wrong with this?
And when you do say something...
I think you have to go back to democracy itself. A lot of these things, it isn't really a question of what the law is. It's a question of the principles on which this country was founded. And it's founded on principles of democracy. Well, what's democracy? Number one, no absolute authority, right? Number two, everyone's accountable for their actions. No immunity. So you can't violate those principles and still have a democracy. And the thing that's happened, and this really goes back to that comment about the missing 13th Amendment of the Constitution.
Yes, yes.
You can't really have a democracy without something like that. You have to start
right.
with the fact that lawyers control the judiciary completely. If you allow
yes.
them to control either the legislature or the executive branch, you no longer have a democracy because there's no checks and balances and no separation of powers. So you can't have a legislature where 0.5% of the population controls the whole legislature, and you've got 60% lawyers. They've now controlled
mm-hmm.
two branches of government. And in fact,
yes.
this is the problem that you're really running into in the guardianship problem. The blame actually lies equally with the legislature and with the judiciary, not just the guardians who commit the crimes. See, the legislature passed the laws that made the crime possible.
Yes.
The judges then gave that authority to the guardians, who then committed the crime. So you've got three
equal
attorneys.
Yes.
And what good does it do to go into the legislature and ask a party to the crime to suddenly repent?
Yeah, right. Well, and the other thing, let me say something here, David. We were not supposed to have a democracy. A democracy is basically mob rule, which is what we're seeing, only the mob is sitting out on the East Coast. We were supposed to have a republic, and that meant everybody pitched in and spoke their piece, and whatever came out of that is what came out of that. Thomas Jefferson, when he emerged from the Constitutional Convention, was asked, you know, what did you give us? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. And this would have been the way to go. But that 13th Amendment, saying that they already knew from England, they already knew that the interference of institutions like the Bar Association, these collections of lawyers, this would be a problem. These people should be kept out of government. They should be kept out of political office because too many of them, and no offense intended, Lisa, I do like you a lot.
You know where I stand.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
But
these bar associations need to be done away with. They have monopolized what is supposed to be our legal system. They have monopolized our courts. And what happened to you people in this hearing, this squirming of these senators, when you called them face-to-face on the corruption that you proved right in their face, they couldn't deny it, they got angry. They got angry. You were not supposed to be that smart. You were not supposed to present them with any evidence. And I have found this when I write, and of course I write and source and document everything. People get angry when I show them, I didn't write this. This is where it came from. This is the piece of legislation it came from. This is who wrote it. Why are you angry at me? They're angry at me because I showed them what had been done, where it was at, who did it. And now that they know, they are obligated to do something about it. And they don't want that obligation. So what you did in that hearing, go ahead.
You might be interested in my final comment to Senator Brownsberger. According to Lisa, he was really squirming. I said at the end, oh, by the way, I made a mistake in one of those papers that I wrote. I said that the Constitution never dealt with the problem of the special case of lawyers. And I guess it turns out I was wrong. There's this hidden 13th Amendment, which actually said you know, that lawyers would be excluded from public offices. And then it got replaced by the other 13th Amendment, where they say that it's illegal to have slavery. But, you know, they forgot to repeal the other one. So, in other words, it's still in effect. You're violating the Constitution by being a legislator.
Well, Judge Blackburn, former Justice Blackburn had said that any law, even by the Supreme Court, that is unconstitutional is null and void as if it had never been written. And he hammered on that. Bork came back again and reiterated that same thing, and they wouldn't let him on the Supreme Court because this man was a strict constitutionalist. And we all know what happened to Justice Scalia, who stuck to the Constitution, hammered on the Constitution, and gosh, he just accidentally died down there at that big ranch in Texas. That was just the damnedest thing. And not a peep out of D.C. Did you people notice?
Yeah.
Not a peep out of D.C.
Not a peep. Nobody's seen anything at all.
You have to be a rock star.
But you know what? This is Steve here.
Yes.
I have advocated for so long, I guess for the last 20 years, and have wanted to go to the bottom steps on the state, on our federal Capitol building, and drill a bunch of holes all the way across that first step. And I want to put in some manure scrapers so we can get some farmers and ranchers with cow shit all over their boots. So we can get all of the lawyers out that's making all these bogus laws and get some common sense in there with some lawyers and ranchers that know how to have a decent conversation and make something happen. Once you get Democrats together, you know, you get a bunch of Democrats together, what's the first thing that they want to do to try to make a decision? They want to form a committee.
Mm-hmm.
And then out of that committee comes about two or three other committees, and it takes months and months and months, sometimes years, for them to make a decision. You get two conservatives together, and they can shake hands after about 5 minutes and say, yeah, buddy, let's go and do it, and they turn right around and go and take care of the issue.
Well, I'd have to disagree with you on that, Steve. I am a political atheist. I believe if it's a politician and his lips are moving and sound is coming out, it's a 99.9% chance you're hearing a lie. And
well, you're exactly
I have been out in D.C., and the one thing that hits you square in the face is that when you're there, there is no political divide. These folks are all working together. And this right-left, Democrat, Republican thing, this is for public consumption. It is kept going to keep the public fighting among itself. And as long as
we are fighting each other,
we won't look at what this band of thugs and crooks is doing out there. This whole thing, it just rankles me so bad. I cannot even begin to tell you how bad this bothers me. But I am sick to death of these politicians. And I think we've got to come up with some form of a plan. And what I mean by that is some way to address this as a unified body, the public coming against these politicians. Either you're going to represent us and not these corporations and not these special interests and not your buddies. You're going to represent us, or we will immediately remove you from office and try to get someone in there who will. And I think it would only take the removal of maybe 50 or 60 of them for them to get the message, because they all seem to be rather obtuse. So it takes a while for the message to carry. But, you know, do you understand what I'm saying? This is.
I do.
Yeah.
For the people, by the people.
Yes. And the only thing is, the people don't matter anymore. It's what can they take from us? What have we got that they want? They talk about this transfer of wealth. Oh, they're redistributing the wealth. People don't want to work. Never mind that 95 million of them can't find a job, but they don't want to work. They just want a handout. And that's all it is. Well, we've got a government that is raiding Social Security, the transportation fund, the airport fund. I mean, every fund that's out there, they're taking the money. And they're blowing it on all kinds of things. And so, and they keep coming back to us for more taxes. Do you realize that the power we have as a collection, as a public, if we just simply stopped in our tracks, brought this country to a standstill, we could change everything overnight. One of the things I have heard continually from these politicians regarding guardianship and these stinking probate courts is, oh, things like this, that takes years to change. Years to change, Marty. No, excuse me, we started 2-3 wars of aggression against people who never did a damn thing to us on a lie and a dime. Did it overnight. What do you mean it takes years?
Really?
It doesn't take years. It takes a willingness to do it.
Yeah,
the
Washington
first thing
without.
You've got to realize that we don't. Senator Brownsberger, in response to one of my articles, said, well, don't forget, Dave, I mean, you elect the governor, and then the governor appoints these things. And I sort of replied to that, and I said, well, you know, when I go to the polls, I only have two choices. And what if I don't like either one of them? In fact, most of my friends say, none of the above. I don't want either
right.
one of these. Well, who picked them? Well, the parties
yes.
picked them. Well, who controls the parties? Well, apparently not the same kind of people as me. In fact, I have a feeling that there's an awful lot of lawyers in there. And maybe
mm-hmm.
for all we know, both parties are really just subsidiaries of the legal party. Maybe
mm-hmm.
this is just a front for the legal party.
Yes.
But if that's the case, we really have a one-party system, the legal party.
Yes.
So we don't really have
exactly.
a choice at all.
Exactly. And it's one party, and none of us was invited. And they've been having a grand time at our expense. I'm looking for, from everybody who's listening, it looks like we've got a gigantic audience again. I'm looking for suggestions of how we can address this, hold these people accountable, and bring this stuff to a screeching halt. This committee hearing that Lisa, David, and Steve attended yesterday, it was a kabuki theater. It was just meant to say we had the hearing, and it'll go into the record as, but nobody objected, and nobody brought forth any evidence. We didn't hear anything that would have changed our minds, blah, blah, blah. And you know how that's going to go. They're going to lie through the teeth, and they're not going to answer any questions either. And, oh, by the way, Senator Brownberger, thank you for subscribing me to your site because I commented over there under David's article. I will be keeping track of what you're doing, sweetie, and reporting on it diligently. Anyway, we've got about 15 minutes left here, maybe about 10 actually, because I have to close the show. Steve, let's start with you. What would you like to say in a closing statement?
Well, I've got some things to say that would probably lend itself for a whole different program all of its own. And it and the drug companies and what they're trying to do is all tied in
yes.
with the same subject that we're talking about.
Yes.
But the overriding thing is for us to save our nation, we have got to try to find a way to get people off of their ivory couches, put away their silver chalices that they've been sipping their wine and their beer out of, and get on some work boots and some work pants, and roll up their sleeves, and let's get out into the streets and work as a unit from we the people standpoint that
yes.
we're not going to take this anymore.
I agree. I agree.
And to me, that is the main overriding problem right now is for this whole nation to band together as one unit. Get rid of these people. I mean, mow Washington to the ground if we have to.
I'll tell you, I think it needs to be. David, what would you like to say?
Well, what I would say is I think we should follow the lead of the 13th Amendment and establish a party where no lawyers are involved. I think probably we'd put up a candidate that would beat either of the other two.
There you go. There is a big Facebook group called Disbar the Bar. And it's growing by the day. And people are so fed up with what passes for this organization and what passes for law and the legal system. They are so fed up with this. It's growing. And, of course, Brian Kinter, who's on with us, runs Judicial Accountability Movement, another massive group that is just growing exponentially. Brian, do you have any last words here you'd like to say before we shut down?
Well, I just believe, Marty, that we have to take it back. I mean, you know, the judiciary has weaseled its way in and far surpassed what their goals or their responsibilities are. You know, they've now, our entire judicial process runs more in tune to a criminal racketeering organization rather than dispensers of justice. And we believe that it's time for a change, for a radical, radical
yes.
change.
Yes. Lisa,
wow,
I'll let you go
good.
Last, sweetie.
Oh, yep. Wow. Okay. Well, you know me, I was having a lot to say, but let's see. First of all, I really need people to know, I'm out on Twitter, so people want to follow me. It's at the Langer Law, B as in boy, ELANGERLAW. And some of the hashtags that really go to what is needed, that silence kills, okay? I need people to know they need to speak up, that the only way to fight against this is to bring in the sunlight. That is the best disinfectant. We need the public outcry, okay? So what we needed yesterday was a court or a legislative hearing room filled with people outraged. But instead, they saved the public guardianship bill, a.k.a. death panel, for the very end. So hardly anybody was there. And so, therefore, Senator Brownsberger thinks he can shut me up by telling me that he is going to have me ejected.
Oh.
But I'll tell you what. You know, you can limit me to the 10 minutes, Mr. Brownsberger. And as I said in my closing statement to Mr. Brownsberger, you have blood on your hands. And I will never shut up. And so, ejection, no ejection. I need people to get out there in numbers, and we need the court of public opinion.
Well, you know, if that had been me, Lisa, and he threatened me with ejection, my response would have been, and probably has been close to this at various times, no, I'll have you ejected, because contrary to what you believe, that chair you're sitting in, I paid for. That Diaz you're sitting at, I paid for. The room you're sitting in, I paid for. So if anybody's leaving here, I believe it's going to be you. And I don't work for you. You work for me. So you're operating under a misconception. And then, as wow. I told a senator in D.C., excuse me, but I would thank you to adopt a little more subordinate attitude. I'm your employer. No other employer would tolerate you speaking this way. You're insubordinate. Assume the position. And
yeah.
The shock on the face was absolutely like, what? I don't allow this. I don't allow this. These are our employees. They are not our kings and queens. And when we quit treating them like the royal heinies they are, we'll get, I think, a little better response from them. As far as Senator Brownsberger goes, I will be addressing a letter to him about this hearing. For those listening, I have posted two of the four videos on the PPJ on the promo for this show, and tomorrow I will post all four videos for this hearing so you can hear this whole thing if you got the stomach for it. What I watched this afternoon, I'm just about make you blow chunks, but anyway, you need to watch it because this is how it works, and it works this way in every state. Every state. These people are sitting up there. They're mad because they had to be there. They're mad because they had to be confronted by the public. They're mad because they couldn't control the conversation. They're mad because they realized they were outed and they were exposed, and there was a camera on them. And that was something they would remember. It used to be back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and they could tell you any kind of a lie, heard it on the evening news. You wouldn't know for 20, 30 years they had lied to you. But it's all different now. They tell a lie within 5 minutes, it's all over the net. And this is the last thing these people wanted, this kind of exposure. So this is what we have to look at here. Use that net. get in these groups, judicial accountability movement, disbarring the bar. Join my page there. It's just Marty Oakley TS Radio. We've got Randall Stone with Future of Our Children, who's doing a bang up job with that. Luann Fleming and Robin Austin that have the FACES organization, Families Against Court Abuse and Embezzlement, that are fighting it like tooth and nail out there in Colorado. We've got so many people out there fighting this. We've got to pull together. We have got together. If we don't, they're going to defeat us. And they plan on us fighting among ourselves, tearing each other up, because as long as we do that, we can't get anything done. So for those who like to participate in that kind of thing, take your dog and pony show and go on somewhere else. For the rest of us, let's pull this thing together. As Lisa said, we need a massive public campaign. A massive, all of us. I don't care what group you belong to. I don't care what you think about anything. In this one issue, we have got to stand up united, and that means doing something more than hitting like and share on Facebook. It means presenting yourself, standing up and presenting yourself and expressing your outrage and your refusal to allow this to continue. Now, there's a lot of us that are doing everything we can, Lisa, Steve, David, attending this hearing. I think you all get credit for that because you knew you were going to be wading in BS all the way. I've got very little patience for that stuff anymore. They just, for some reason, they don't like to see me. I don't know why. I'm a nice person. But anyway, we've got to do this. We've got just a few minutes here. I want to thank you all for coming on this evening. We're going to stay on top of this. I would like everybody else to please visit Boston Broadside. You can access it from the right sidebar on the PBJ Gazette, and I will be posting articles regularly from Lonnie Brennan from the Boston Broadside. You can subscribe to the paper, get it in hard copy. It's not at all expensive, but this is one of the most honest newspapers out there, and there is some real news in there you need to know. Anyway, with all of that, I'm going to close this down for this evening. Again, thank you, everyone, for taking part. Brian, thank you for kicking in with here with us, and we will be back. What is this? This is Wednesday. What day is it? I'll be back tomorrow night with whistleblowers, and I've got Tammy and Mickey Mitchell coming on about another debacle at another VA hospital that cost Tammy her job and at that hospital. So we'll be talking about that. In the meantime, thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Again, thank you to my guests, and we'll say good night.
Good night. Thank you. Mm-hmm.